Good morning. It's great to see everyone out here today on Father's Day. It is Father's Day, and we do want to honor fathers today. As we continue on with this series on encounters with Jesus, we've been looking at encounters that Jesus had with some specific people who are unnamed. Now we're going to look at an encounter he has with some, we know at least the group of people by name, and an encounter he has with another prompts him to tell a story. Our text is in Luke 15, and it's most commonly referred to as the story of the prodigal son. I'll be calling your attention to the text there, and if you want to follow along in your pew Bibles, we encourage you to do that. But as I read it, I would ask you to concentrate not on the prodigal son today so much in the story, but on the perfect father. In the process, I pray that we'll be able to learn some things about our Father in heaven and about us as our fathers upon this earth. It begins at verse 1. I'm going to read just the first few verses of that chapter, and then we're going to jump ahead to verse 11. It says in verse 1, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.' Then Jesus told them this parable." And then in verse 11, we're going to find that he tells three parables, but in verse 11, the third parable that he tells is one, again, we refer to as the prodigal son. He says, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and he went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For the son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost, was found.' But they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, 'What was going on?' 'Your brother has come,' he replied. 'And your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back with him, safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. You never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you killed the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" First of all, hopefully you've seen that the parable was originally directed to the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, again, in response to their criticisms of Jesus. The father in the story is obviously God the Father. The elder brother in the story, well, he would represent these Jewish leaders, these Pharisees, these teachers of the law, who had tried hard to follow the rules of the law and were resentful that their Father in heaven would be gracious towards anyone who had not. The younger brother, well, he represents those Jesus had been reaching out to, those he had been ministering to, those he had been speaking to, those he had been calling into the fold, and more broadly, all of the Gentiles who God would welcome into his arms. But today, as I've already stressed, I want us to focus not on the sons, either one of them really, but on the Father. Let's see what we can learn about him, and in the process, what we can learn about fathers today who have that awesome responsibility trying to imitate him. For that is the Father's primary role. We're to do our best to present a picture of God, the Father, our children, and our children's children. An awesome role. A difficult role. But one that we have as fathers. The father in this story wanted what was best for his children. I think that's pretty obvious. He provided for them. He raised them in such a way as to instill within them a sense of belonging and purpose. He gave them everything they could need and probably a whole lot more, and even made some plans, some specific plans for their future. He wanted what was best for them in the present and what was best for them in the long term. Remember, this is the story of God, the perfect Father. And he not only provides for his children, he guides his children. He gives them direction. He gives them a spiritual compass. He plans for their future and points them to that future. Yet, once the children were old enough, the father did not try to control them. He let them make their own choices. Now, I don't think that the younger son was a teenager who thought he was old enough, or even a tween, you know, someone between their adolescent and teen years, or an adolescent who just thought, again, they were old enough to make their own decisions, who thought they were mature enough, who thought they knew what was best for them. I get the impression this is a young man who should have been old enough to make some rational decisions. A father knows how hard it is to see their kids rebel, to watch them make choices and decisions that could hurt themselves and others, especially when they've been advised differently. To know that so much pain could be avoided if they just listen, if they just pay attention, if they just go in the direction that they're pointed. But yet, the father did not force either of his children to choose his path for them. This is the story of God. God, the perfect father. And notice, he loves with an open hand. The father grieved over the younger son's decision. He didn't condone it, but he did permit it. It broke his heart to see him go. I'm convinced of that, and I believe his heart was heavy every day that he was gone, which is evidenced from the fact that he looked and longed for the boy's return. But notice that the father did not go after him. He did not go and search him out and drag him home against his will. Well, wait, we might say, what about that other parable? Even in the same chapter in Luke 15, that one about the lost sheep, you know, where the shepherd goes and rescues the sheep that had gone astray, maybe even bringing it home against its will. We've seen those pictures, those paintings perhaps of the shepherd bringing that sheep home draped over his shoulders. We like that parable. We like that story. And certainly that's what we would do and should do, you would think, if a child wanders away. But again, that's a different story. This child walked away, didn't wander away. He made a conscious decision to leave his father and his father's house, and his father led him. How many of you fathers today know that it hurts to love that way? But a love that's controlling and manipulative will not be seen as love at all, will it? A father grieves over children who rebel, of children who consciously reject the path that would be best for them. But remember, this is the story of God, who grieves as well when his children wander away. But this perfect father grieves over their decision, but he never stops caring for them in spite of their decision. How do I know that? Well, when the boy came to his senses, realizing that he'd made the biggest mistake of his life, and he comes home, the father sees him coming from a long way off, and the father runs to meet him. He is overjoyed to see his son returning. The grief turns to joy, and he runs to him to embrace him, to kiss him, it says. It's interesting he didn't berate him at that time. He didn't say, "I told you so." He doesn't scold him. In fact, he did the opposite. He saw to his immediate needs. He welcomed him home. He gave him the ring and the robe and the sandals. And then he threw a party for him. Killed that fattened calf. Now, fathers, you know, I'm sure that this can be difficult to work through this, to process this, because you don't want to reward bad behavior. And that's not what the father in our story is doing either. But when it's evident that a child has suffered enough, that they've learned their lesson, that it's time to open our arms, to hold them and assure them we love them no matter where they've been or what they have done. The father in the story was overjoyed to have his child home. He forgave his child. And remember that the father in the story is not just any father. This is the story of God, the perfect father. And he is gloriously gracious, grace abounding, forgiveness overflowing. The father in the story didn't play favorites or choose sides. The older son thought he did. He felt cheated because he believed that he had earned his father's love, but his brother, who obviously had not, was receiving special treatment. We might be able to identify with the elder brother here and think, yes, we could understand why he would feel that way. But the father makes it clear that it's not the case. He's not playing favorites. Especially when he says in verse 31, "My son, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours." But we had to celebrate. And be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. It's an indication that, you know, if the situation was reversed, I would be doing this for you. That I'm not neglecting you. What is strange, though, that at this particular point in time, this son who stayed is in some ways doing what his brother had done, the one who left. He's refusing to come into his father's house because he doesn't agree with his father's ruling. So he chooses to distance himself. How very sad. How very sad that someone even who is in the father's good graces, who has stayed, could behave in such a way with resentment to the father lavishing grace upon someone else. As if there's not enough to go around. rather than condemn this son, the father invites him to the feast. Invites him in to celebrate with them. Urges him, come and celebrate with us. This father doesn't play favorites. And this father is the perfect father. God the Father. And his love is unconditional. The fathers out there today, I urge you to want what's best for your children. To want what's best. To make it evident to them that you really want what's best for them. That even as you give them instruction, you give them guidance, that you impress upon them that it's for their best you're doing this. It's not about trying to rob them of joy or happiness in life, but rather they would find fulfillment and true joy in life. And then fathers, rather than control them, try to guide them. Try to do that. In time, they're going to make their own choices, and you'll have to let them. I think it's interesting that Nina and I, the very first time that we saw a mother or a father have a child on a leash. Have you ever seen that? We've seen that at say, amusement parks or shopping malls. And it seems so strange to us. We had managed somehow to raise our children without that. But here were parents doing that, and it seems so cruel. It seems so controlling. It seems so strange. Now, obviously, they wanted what was best for the children. Obviously, they were trying to protect them and keep them safe, and that's why they were doing that. At least, I hope that's why they were doing that. I believe that's why they were doing that. But you know, the time comes when you have to let them off the leash. The time comes when you have to let them cross the street, when you have to let them out of the backyard, that you have to let them set their own curfews and make their own choices and decisions. You want to guide them, give them the instruction, the direction, the principles that will help them to mature to a point where they can make their own decisions and make wise ones, but you've got to let them make them. That's hard. That's hard. To love them with an open hand. To not hold them back. To not chain them up. To not make them feel restricted. But to give them liberty to choose. Father in heaven has done that for us. We need to do that for our children. We need to make sure that we never stop caring. That we never stop loving them. That our hearts are never closed to them. I couldn't help but think, I wonder how many children who have gone astray might come home if they understood that their fathers still cared. And their fathers were willing to do as the father in the story did. When they mess up, and they will, that we would be gracious to forgive, that fathers would be gracious to forgive. They would be ready and willing to forgive them, not to punish, not to even discipline them. When they come truly understanding they've made a mistake and they acknowledge that we accept them back with complete love, acceptance. Treating them not as slaves. Not holding them responsible or continuing to punish them or abuse them over something they did once upon a time. Or insisting that, you know what, you've done it again. Or remember the last time, every time that something comes, that we would really forgive. And then they would know that our love is truly unconditional. That they didn't earn our love in the first place. By their good behavior, and they can't lose our love. Bad behavior. That we truly love them without condition. And that love never, never ceases. That love never decreases. Constant. Pure. And again, if they knew that, if they understood that, maybe when they wander astray, or when they purposely go astray, they would come to their senses and come home. And come home. Praise God that He, as a perfect Father, was gracious enough, loving enough, caring enough, that when we needed to come home, He opened His arms to us. That He actually sent His older son to invite us home. His older son, His only son, His one and only son, Jesus said, "Come, come, all you who labor and are heavy laden, all you who are burdened, all you who are downcast, and all you who are poor, all you who are hurting, and come, come home. Come home and find rest. If you have not accepted the love of the perfect Father today, then I invite you into His arms. And if you have been there, you've experienced that, you know that, but you have walked away or you have wandered away, either way, the Father wants you to come home. And we're here. Not as people who will begrudge that, but are people who will celebrate that with you. We will celebrate your coming home with you and with our Father. Jesus says there's rejoicing in heaven when a sinner repents. When a son, when a daughter comes home, there's rejoicing in heaven. And they're rejoicing here as we rejoice with those in heaven if you come home today. If there's any way that we can assist you or help you, let us know that while we sing together, "I Have Decided to Follow Jesus," an old hymn with a different chorus.
Jesus, we give you our praise. You're our greatest prize, our greatest treasure. and we will forsake everything for the joy of knowing you. We worship you alone in this place.
I will give to you.